Good evening. We'll call our city council meeting to order. Now, let me just check in. Is that clock in the back still 5 minutes off, or are we right on track now? We're right on, so we'll go by that clock in the back. We just returned from a closed session. I'll ask our city attorney if there's anything to report from our closed session.
There is no report.
Thank you. Moving on to our agenda, we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Sturdivant. And thank you. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie, here. Councilmember Sturdivant.
Here.
Councilmember Kelly.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Here.
Mayor O'Malley.
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item is approval of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
I think that was Councilmember Kelly. Correct?
I heard Councilman Fonzie, so
okay.
He happened to be closer to the mic.
Oh, that was it. Okay, because I heard him. Okay, I'll switch that over.
Or she has a cold, one of the two. Go ahead.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Oh, yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. What we have first thing on the agenda is a proclamation, and it's always a pleasure. The council enjoys doing these because it's usually recognizing another one of our community organizations that does so much for us. And again, tonight, it's the proclamation recognizing 100 years of service by the Community Church of Atascadero. I'm going to read this proclamation, and then we're going to invite Pastor Heather Branton up and let her take the lead. And I told her as long as she didn't let Mr. May speak too much, she could speak as long as she wanted. So apparently everyone kind of knows something about that. So anyway, our proclamation recognizing 100 years of service, whereas the Community Church of Atascadero has been serving the residents and the community of Atascadero for over 100 years, and whereas the Community Church began as the Federated Church of Atascadero on July 18, 1915, with just 5 people in attendance, and whereas the Federated Church was founded as a single church to serve all, regardless of affiliation, in accordance with the popular wish of our colony residents, and whereas the Federated Church changed names and locations several times throughout the decades and became known as the Community Church of Atascadero in 1929, and whereas the original concept of an active, community-oriented church continues to the part of the day-to-day life of the congregation, and whereas throughout its long history of service to the Community Church has been a busy place of worship and a socially active church, and whereas in part, the mission of the Community Church is to work together, providing an environment open for all to develop Christian values and support one another, to respond with compassion to the needs of others, to strive for truth, justice, and peace, to be an open and affirming church, and to welcome all individuals and families. And whereas the motto of the Community Church is, whoever you are and wherever you are on life's journey, you are welcome to worship with us. Now, therefore, it is hereby proclaimed that the City Council of the City of Atascadero recognizes and expresses sincere appreciation to the Community Church of Atascadero for 100 years of dedicated service to the citizens and community of Atascadero. Thank you. Now, I had hoped we could deliver this up at Stadium Park, as this was first brought to my attention by Mr. Kent Kenny of your congregation as well, infamous as much as a Mr. May, I believe. But we didn't have enough rain during colony days to make that a possibility. But what fitting location than our historic City Hall, where we recently also experienced our 100th anniversary. So we're very honored to have you here this evening. We would invite Pastor Heather Branton, please come up and share some words if you'd like. And then we'll join you and anyone you'd like to bring with you for a photo up in front of the dais when you're done. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mayor O'Malley, and all of City Council for this honor. It truly is an honor to receive this proclamation on behalf of Community Church of Atascadero, United Church of Christ. Let me introduce myself. I am Reverend Heather Branton, pastor of Community Church. I've been here for just over 1 year. And as I have begun to dig my roots within this city, I have been truly impressed by the active engagement of so many people in Atascadero who love this place and work together to enable more people to thrive and enjoy living in this amazingly beautiful place. It is humbling to be pastor of a congregation that is so integrally part of Atascadero. From the very beginning on to the present day, the people of this congregation have lived out their faith and worked to improve the lives of many in this area. People who are hungry, people without homes, people who struggle with mental illness, people trapped by violence, people who have been wounded by stigma and rejection. We believe that God is still speaking, still active, that the Holy One is still creating and breathing new life into our world, challenging us to new understandings of what is holy and sacred. As a congregation, we seek to build upon our legacy of service and commitment to social justice so that we continue to be a congregation of passion and compassion, of hope and healing, as our community continues to grow and change. As noted in the proclamation, our motto is, "Whoever you are, and wherever you are on life's journey, you are welcome to worship with us." We do not always agree with each other. We don't always have the same perspectives or even politics. What draws us together is living out our faith values of welcome to people of varying sexual identities and orientations, people of differing ethnicities, to people who believe and those who don't. What draws us together is our faith calling to work for justice and for peace. We take our legacy seriously. Those people who gathered together 100 years ago did not come from the same religious backgrounds, did not agree on biblical interpretations, did not worship in the same ways as each other, but they found common ground in the scripture from the gospel according to Luke when Jesus was challenged to declare what was worthy of eternal life. His response was, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your being, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Over the years, the people of Community Church of Atascadero have sought to do exactly that. And so now, with 100 years behind us, we are eager to see what God has in store for the next 100 years. Thank you so much for this proclamation and for your recognition of the Community Church of Atascadero, United Church of Christ. We are proud to be part of a city that works together to make life better for the residents and seeks to be responsible for the legacy entrusted to all of us. May the Holy One, who is beyond all that we know or believe, and yet present in every fiber of all that is, bless each of you with a spirit of love and compassion and gratitude for the sacredness of all creation. Amen. And thank you.
And thank you. And let's have a round of applause for the community service of the Community Church. Thank you. And please, I'm going to invite the council to join us up in front of the dais. If you would like to invite anyone with you, you would like, and we'll do a quick photo. Well, again, thank you all members of the Community Church for coming out this evening and being part of this proclamation. Next item on our agenda is the consent calendar, made up of items considered to be routine of nature, not needing a lot of discussion, and can be voted on as a group. Any council member wishing to pull an item or a member of the public wishing to pull an item for further discussion? I'm going to ask, rather than pulling an item, but I would ask the city manager for just a little brief description on a couple of these agenda items, and specifically item number 6 and 7. I think these are primarily cost reduction items. Could you just give a little bit of a, for the record, a discussion of what those items entail?
Yes, these are both very similar type of items. One is for more of the public works type of inspections and plan checks associated with new development, and the other is for some extra planning assistance. The volume of work that we've had for new development has increased dramatically over the last couple of years. The economy's starting to come back. We're seeing an increase in the number of permits. And am I pulling the right ones here, 6 and 7?
Yes.
Yes. And because of that, we had hired some contractors to help fill in those positions. As part of the new budget cycle, you did authorize some full-time people to go ahead and fill those positions because our level has exceeded that. But it's taking us a little bit longer than we had anticipated to fill these positions. And so what we would like to do is go ahead and extend these contracts, mainly until the position is filled, but also we use these contractors to fill in when our volume is higher than existing staff can do. So this would also allow us to continue to use them for that.
Thank you. And I do want to comment about our staff. Again, I was always impressed when we would compare with other cities. I think it was back in 2013. We looked at comparing how does our city staff process permits, for example, compared to other cities. And not only did our city process more permits than every other city in the county, we processed more permits per staff person than any other county by a significant margin. So I think we've been very frugal, and we recognize our staff has really done a good job in this, and we're glad that you've kept an eye on the budget on those items, and we've still done a good job. Thank you. With that, I'd entertain a motion on the consent calendar items.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzi, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Marino. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is updates from the city manager.
Thank you. The first items I'd like to talk about are some of our wonderful holiday events that we have here in the city that we just experienced. On Friday, we had our holiday lighting ceremony, which is always a wonderful event. We had the show choir here, the community band. We had Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus. We got both of them this year to show up. Rode our antique fire truck into in front of City Hall and sat and listened to all the kids' Christmas wishes and stuff. It was a wonderful experience. I know all of the council members were there. We had a fantastic group helping Mayor O'Malley count down until the lights went on. I think this is the most enthusiastic group that I've seen in quite some time, and Mayor O'Malley did a wonderful job counting down with them to do that. So it was a great ceremony, was well attended. A lot of people had fun. We, of course, had the Historical Society docents giving tours of our city hall, had hot chocolate, great event. And that was followed very quickly on Saturday night by another great event, which is the Holiday Walk Around the Lake. This is a event that is sponsored by the Atascadero Lake Homeowners Association. They are the ones that put it on. But the city participates. Not only do we allow people to get into the zoo free that night, and we had our zookeepers there roasting marshmallows for those patrons that visited the zoo that night. They could all have a roasted marshmallow. But we also had a booth that was manned by your city council. So these guys were out there in the cold, working hard, handing out hot cider and cookies to the walkers that went around. There were a lot of great houses that were decorated well, good sings, good music, wonderful event for all. I think it's one of my favorite events here at the city. Next week, we're going to have another perennial flavor. Oh, there is more pictures of a Holiday Walk Around the Lake. And next, we're going to have Winter Wonderland. So Winter Wonderland is coming back this year. You may recall that we had some severe weather that unfortunately canceled Winter Wonderland at the last minute last year. That was a very frustrating thing. Hopefully Mother Nature will be a lot nicer to us. We certainly don't have the winds that were predicted for that storm that we had last year, so that's good. It will be held on Friday, December 11th from 5 to 9 p.m., and we're going to be bringing in over 50 tons of snow. So lots and lots of snow here in Atascadero. We're excited to have it. We'll have a massive snow slide, which is going to be built and manned by the local Kiwanis clubs, two snow play areas for all ages to enjoy, a rock climbing wall, bounce houses, the Elk's Little Train, which is always a favorite with the little ones. And, of course, Santa and Mrs. Claus will be coming back here to Atascadero to hear those boys and girls that missed last Friday. There'll be plenty of really fun music and dance performance, demonstrations by the 805 Board Shop Skate Team, and so much more. We'll have, we've heard a rumor, oh, I don't know if I should spread this rumor, but this would be exciting, a rumor that Santa may be the first to take a ride down the giant slide. I don't know if Mrs. Claus is going to join in, too, but that would be worth a picture right there. Then Santa and Mrs. Claus will be available for visitors at the front of Historic City Hall until 9 p.m. The event is free to attend. There'll be lots of vendors. This is a great place to do your Christmas shopping, not only at the booths right there on the street, but a lot of our downtown merchants will be open. Come by, take a look, go in those stores. It's amazing how much we have right here in our town. So put on your snow gloves and snow boots and warm hat and prepare for a very wonderful evening here in the downtown.
Well, thank you. There's so much more. Who could be bored in Atascadero?
Exactly.
Continue on.
We have holiday magic we have to talk about, too. As if walk around the lake and holiday lighting and Winter Wonderland are enough, December 19th, we'll have holiday magic from 11 to 2. And this is the event at the zoo where the zoos get to open their presents. So Christmas comes a little bit early to our zoo animals. The animals will be receiving holiday gifts that have been crafted with care by the zookeepers and some very special elves. Visitors to Holiday Magic can watch as the animals tear open and enjoy their gifts, which is a lot of fun. So that'll be exciting. I also have a pitch. If you're bored, we have more. We would love to get some docents for our Historic City Hall tours. Anyone who loves our local history, who has an interest in learning about our local history and the history of the beautiful building, if you're interested in becoming a docent, the Historical Society is putting out a call for all docents. We're now giving tours on Fridays, Saturdays, and Wednesdays. We'd certainly like a big pool. They've been very well received, and we'd like to be able to offer more to all of those that are interested. So please contact the Historical Society to learn more, or you can contact the city manager's office, and we'll also get you in touch with them. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about the Waste Management Buyback Center status. There have been a lot of rumors that the city is closing down the recycling buyback center. That is not true. We are trying to do everything we can to keep the buyback center open. We would love to see Waste Management choose to keep it open. In fact, we've been negotiating and have brought some options to you in August. We have Waste Management is asking for extra funds from our ratepayers in order to keep that buyback center open. And at this point, the numbers just aren't working out. But we continue to work with Waste Management. We continue to negotiate, and we're continuing to try and keep that open. So we'll continue to do that. You would hate to see that close, and those recycling centers would then have to move to those grocery stores like you see in other towns. We are required to have a recycling center here in Atascadero. Each of the grocery stores is required to provide it. So no matter what, there will be recycling options here in Atascadero. But we think the recycling center is a little above that, and so we continue to negotiate. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Council questions. Seeing none, well, I did. I think all council members had fun. We were all out there for the Christmas tree lighting. And, you know, it's harder than you think counting all the way from 10. Usually we only have to count to 5, and we're figuring, you know, that's pretty good here, but 10. And my granddaughter, who's been at the tree lighting every year since she was born, I noticed you had a picture of her on Santa's lap. And I got to tell you about those tours. She said she liked the tour of City Hall better than being with Santa Claus. So that tells you something about these historic tours here. So do follow up with the Historical Society on that. It is a lot of fun for all. Well, next on our agenda is the community forum. This is where I was going to remind Pastor Vern Haynes. Yep, this is community forum now, where we invite everyone to come up and share anything they would like, and we would welcome you up to the lectern.
First of all, I'd like to say hello to all of you. It's such a exciting opportunity to stand before people who have the desire to do what is right and how to treat people and make them feel important. That's kind of made me think about when I go home, my wife will say, hello, Vern. I know that she shows love and respect, and we ought to learn how to do that like I feel here tonight. I feel just as great as any man ever lived to be in the presence of people who have the right determination, knowing that God is God, and whatever we need, we can go to Him. And if it's in His will, He can supply that need, but we have to be in line and in tune with Him and tell everybody, you know what, I love the Lord. And I'm saying to all of you, I love the Lord. There is nothing any greater than being a lover of the Lord. Somebody say amen. I don't know if you're supposed to say it amen here or not, amen. But anyway, it's saying that I agree with you. And I thank you for this golden opportunity. I thank you for all of the officers who are working in Atascadero. I've been here over 30-some years myself. Don't know you by name, but I know what you look like. Hello, somebody. So, but I don't say nothing to you. I just look at you, and I'm thank you for this opportunity of being able to pray. You know, prayer is kind of like when you cook a nice coconut cake and you put the icing on top of it. Don't it make it look a lot better than no icing at all? So when you learn how to pray, you're putting that icing on top of that cake. And we want to pray and give God the praise for what we're about to do here tonight. So if you don't mind, if you'd pray with me, then God will do the rest. Our Father God, we thank you again for another golden opportunity of being able to express the love and understanding of what we are about to do and what we should be doing as your believers. And in our fair city, help us to be faithful and dedicated and thankful for what we have done and what we can do, because Atascadero have came from a mighty long ways. I'm proof of that. And I'm thankful because I know that have to be a God to do what have been happened to me in the last 30 years. Thanks for all of our officers, because I realize you have a strong job. Regardless of how strong you are, somebody going to criticize you. But you have God to lean on. Regardless of what they say about you, you can just lean on God. And He'll say, it's okay. Everything's going to be all right. God is a good God, but he wants us to be respectful. He wants us to be dedicated. He wants us to be fair. He wants us to be concerned about the entire world, not just the Tuscadero. Help us to be loving. Help us to learn how to follow leadership, and help us to learn how to encourage our leaders that they may become stronger and do a much more and a better and a more effective job with your cooperation. I'm thankful for this opportunity because I didn't have to be here. And when I was called up and said I was supposed to be here, I said, let me go. And I was really shocked. My wife started getting ready, and she said, I'm going too. That's a blessing within itself. Together we stand, divided we fall. Thank you for our leaders and all our men and women who are working for our Tuscadero, that we learn how to work together with our leaders, and that our Tuscadero will become one of the most greatest churches, and not churches, but cities in California. We can do it if we just go to God. God can do all things. I didn't mean to raise my voice, but God can do all things if we go to him in prayer. Thank you so much for this opportunity. May God bless you. I appreciate this. Thank you.
Amen. Thank you, Pastor Haynes. Welcome, next speaker.
Hi, I just wanted to encourage that our city would join San Luis Obispo with banning polystyrene, which causes all kinds of problems in our environment. The birds and wildlife eat it, and it sticks in their intestine, and they are, and then they can starve from that. And it gluts up the landfill. We can't recycle it, and it's just something that we don't want in our environment. It's poisonous to humans if the hot liquids are melt the styrene slightly, then the toxins are released into the human body. And I'm hoping we will ban that. Thank you.
Will you please state your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Susan Lara.
Fine job. Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Rocio Osio. I am honored to be here sharing important information for the well-being of the community. Stanford School of Medicine has developed a six-week workshop. It is called the Chronic Disease Self-Management. Among colleagues and to the public, it's known as healthier living. Take care your life. I have been trained as a lay leader to facilitate these workshops. The Healthier Living, Take Care Your Life workshop is an evidence-based curriculum that has made a great impact to those that have been attended. This was done in a five-year research project which evaluated over 8,000 people. This study found that people improved their healthful behaviors, such exercise, cognitive symptom management, coping, and communications with physicians upon attending this workshop. It also showed improvement in their health status when it came to their fatigue, disability, social or role activities, also health distress. This workshop also helped them decrease their days in the hospital. The Healthier Living, Take Care Your Life has made a great impact in my life because now I have different tools to cope with daily life. Therefore, I encourage you to be a part of a minimum of 8 people or 15 people maximum to take advantage of this free program. I thank you for the opportunity, and I encourage you and congratulate you for taking the time to help improve the life of the community. The Chronic Disease Self-Management Workshops. I hope to see you in the next Healthier Living Workshops. Please take note. You may call Patty Herrera, 542-6268. One more time, area code 805-542-6268. Thank you very much.
And thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
My name is Maya Lara, and I am a member of this community, and my family has been here for 3 generations. My grandfather taught at the Atascadero High School, and know many of you from around the community. And this is my friend Janine, and she's here to speak on behalf of banning polystyrene here in Atascadero, as they have done in many of the communities around San Luis Obispo, I believe, Grover Beach. And Janine can tell us a little bit more.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm honored to be here to represent our local grassroots organization called Slow Foam Free. We represent the whole county, and we organized based in San Luis. A year ago in March, we organized and went to City Council and presented the petition that San Luis become styrofoam free with the reasons of issues like this. It's a container, foam-free foam container found on the beach. Birds eat it. They try to get the food out of it, and in the process, they consume styrofoam. In 2013, McDonald's decided to go styrofoam free. Unfortunately, they still serve a 26-ounce bottle of container for it's usually iced tea. This is thrown out in San Luis. It's garbage. It's trash. It never goes away. Now, in September of this year, Governor Brown announced a new petition, a new initiative. It's called the 75% Initiative. He hopes that we lessen our dependence on landfill by 75%. Stuff needs to be recycled, decomposed, or composted. The 25% can go to landfill. This stuff has none of the above. It has to go to landfill. The big block stuff, anything that's contaminated with food cannot be recycled. So we urge you to adopt what San Luis has adopted. It's called the Expanded Polystyrene Regulation, and it includes the restriction to all restaurants and food caterers, as well as retail stores may not sell it. So it's already been addressed, but it's litter, it's toxic to our environment, and it's also toxic to us people. We have happily added Pismo Beach to our list. They've just ordained it November 17. We've been to Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Paso Robles 2 weeks ago. You're our last county city to go to, and we hope that within a year, San Luis Obispo County will be the second county in the state to become styrofoam free in both restaurant and retail. There are 3 other counties that have addressed the restaurant era effort, but it's only half of the problem. When you can still buy it and you go to the beach with your cooler, that's the other half of the problem. So thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
May I speak now?
Well, if you're doing a brief introduction again, or you were wanting...
No, actually, I did want to speak on my own behalf.
Why don't you wait to the end, just as it's our custom to let everyone who hasn't spoken have a chance to speak first, and then I'll allow a second go-around. And so since you've already spoken, if you just wait, we'll let you have another chance. Just because your dad was my math teacher... No, just kidding. Anyone can speak a second time. Welcome, next speaker.
Hi, My name is Sierra Rose Prisabella. I'm also a lifelong North County resident. I'm originally from Paso Robles, but I do live in Atascadero now, and I like it here very much. It reminds me of the way Paso Robles used to be. I'm sorry. I just wanted to voice my advocacy as well as part of a large and growing constituency of people who agree that individual cities as well as the San Luis Obispo County should be part of these forerunner counties in joining the ban on polystyrene. It is an opportunity that we have to lead here, and it's a unique one, and I think that we should take it.
Thank you. Is there any other speakers on this issue of polystyrene? If not, I'm going to invite you back up. I guess actually it was your grandfather. I stand corrected. Yeah. Time flies. What can I say? Welcome, and then we'll continue on with community forum. So if you'd like to have some final words, welcome.
So I wanted to say, as somebody who's worked in small businesses here in Atascadero, and just as a member of the community and knowing how a lot of people feel about different sorts of regulation, I just wanted to say that something like this is actually a benefit to all the businesses, because by taking action and regulating an issue like this, it levels the playing field for the businesses. That way, if you're a restaurant who really wants to offer something that will not poison the environment, that will not be here when our kids and our grandkids are here, past when we are, you will be punished. You will be paying more for something, and your business will be paying more. Whereas the other place, it's just like getting what's cheap, they're going to have a greater margin. And this way, if we can say, look, let's all participate in this, have something that is going to create a healthier environment for us, our community, this beautiful place that we live, then we can breathe easy knowing that we're all in the same boat. We're all playing under the same rules, and we're all working to create something that's going to be beautiful, wonderful for the future generation. So thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is David Leidner. I'm a board member of Atheists United San Luis Obispo. We're a local community of 450 non-believers in this county, including Atascadero. As a consequence of last week's shooting in San Bernardino, calls have been made to treat an entire class of people with greater scrutiny and restrictions simply because they are Muslim. This is a disturbing example of the discrimination that Atheists United has always opposed. No government, national or local, should treat anyone differently based on their affiliation with a specific religion or their affiliation with no religion. This goes from excluding Muslims at our borders to giving special legal exemptions to religious groups to displaying "In God We Trust" on our government property. Just as there are moral Christians in this city, there are also moral Muslims and moral atheists and other moral citizens who are none of these. Atheists United asks the council to help ensure that this is not forgotten in Atascadero and to work to create an environment where no particular religious affiliation or non-affiliation is given any special privilege or sanction. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other speakers on any item that's not on the agenda? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. And I will say a few words on the styrofoam issue. It's not an agendized item, so we really can't deliberate or make a decision. We really can't even talk about it too much. I may be saying a little bit more we have an agenda item where we give reports on committees we're involved in, and as a past chair of the Integrated Waste Management Authority and continuing to be a member for at least another month, I will be giving a report a little bit on that as a topic. We, of course, keep in touch with the countywide mayor's meeting. It's a discussion topic, what other cities are doing. I've already asked our city manager to look into the fact that we have Restaurant Month coming up here, and our city council, as well as the Tourism Business Improvement District Board, is really championing what we can do more in marketing, working with the restaurants. I suggested we use that opportunity as we communicate with the restaurants. We've contacted Integrated Waste Management Authority with what are the resources for restaurants and caterers for alternatives, and we want to communicate that, I think, as a resource for folks to be looking at as something that they can be looking at right now. Fortunately, as you know, there's been a significant reduction in use across our county, really across the state, and then I think this is an item that we are watching as other cities go through this, and it could well be something the council brings back later, certainly within the next year. We're seeing what other cities are doing, and I do think it is a good idea for there to be uniformity throughout the county. So it is something we'll keep an eye on and appreciate you coming out on this topic. So I'm sure we'll have some further discussion, and it's possible council may actually agendize it, and be sure to keep your contact information with our city clerk so that if we do actually have an agendized item, you're made aware of that. And I know Luke will keep you informed through Atascadero News as well. Any council discussion on any of the community forum items, or we'll move on with the agenda? Go ahead.
I just did want to make clear the healthier living programs that Rocio was talking about. Those are free to the public. And so if any of those sounded of interest or you want more information, I would encourage people to call that phone number that she gave out.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is under public hearings is our 2016 Community Development Block Grants. This is always a little frustrating for council because there's so many important and good organizations doing good things in our community and just not enough funds to meet the need. So we're going to do what we can with this item, and we'll turn it over to Nick DeBar, our city engineer.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Good evening, City Council. As Mayor O'Malley mentioned, tonight's we're going to be looking at the community block grant draft funding recommendations. So the city does participate with the county of San Luis Obispo and the other local cities as part of the Urban County CDBG program. Urban counties receive annual formula-based grants through the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, or otherwise known as HUD. And the Urban County program is locally administered by the County of San Luis Obispo. So in order to qualify for the funding, a community development activity must meet one of the three national objectives. Sorry, I wasn't keeping up with the slides. One is to benefit individuals with lower moderate incomes. The second is to help or prevent, eliminate blight. And the third is to address serious and immediate threats to the health or welfare of the community. So this year, or next year, 2016, there is available $159,143. This is an estimate based on that formulatory equation that they have. It is really based on prior year funding levels as well. And the final amount will be set early next year by HUD. So HUD has limits on the maximum that can be spent on any one category. Public services is a category where the city receives the most applications each year for funding. However, that's only 15% cap of the total funding that can be spent in this category. The maximum amount for that category for the public services is estimated to be $23,871 on tonight's recommendations. They also set a max for the admin for the program of 20% of the grant amount. Last year, there were some changes where the county started doing more of the administration, so they do take a portion of that. So HUD recently advised the county that due to the complexity of the administration and consequences of the noncompliance with the HUD regulations, HUD recommended that the city propose or do more of the monitoring compliance checking with that. The county did move forward with these recommendations and made some changes to the cooperative agreements related to the Urban County CDBG program. These changes are effective for all parties and to the agreement, including the cities within the county, including Atascadero, Aurora Grande, Morro Bay, Paso Robles, and San Luis Obispo City. The county does take 13% of that estimated amount that's available for their administrative cost, or $20,688. And becoming a minimum county funding threshold for $8,000 cumulatively. So if we get an application with the cities I mentioned plus the county, those applications have to have at least $8,000 in funding collectively to be considered as a successful applicant for that. So you'll see tonight there's some that are underneath that $8,000 threshold. However, they've made application to other cities in the county to have a total of $8,000 or more. So here is the applications we received this year. There's five for public services and one for the public facilities. Traditionally, we've only received one for the public facilities. It's typically from the city of Atascadero, and we've been using in recent years these monies on the accessibility barrier removal projects, ADA improvements. As you can see, in the public services, it's limited to 15%, so we have $23,871 estimated to be available, and we'll know this exact number earlier next year. The first one in that, I guess, third row down is the Atascadero Loaves and Fishes. They've asked for $10,000. City of Atascadero, the Youth Activity Scholarship, $10,000. ECHO is $8,000. CASA, which is a Child Advocate Support Court System, court-related, it's $8,000. Then Transitions, which is a countywide mental health hotline, was $1,500. And then also on the bottom there are the administrative costs broken down as well between the city and the county. So an explanation or brief summary of all the applicants are included in your written report that you received. And I can explain any of those, you know, during the question session. So a couple updates. There's only been two cities that have already held the draft recommendations and made recommendations on these, Paso Robles and the city of SLO. Tonight, Morro Bay, Atascadero, and Aurora Grande are all looking at their draft recommendations, but I do have some updated information with regard to, you know, our applications for the public services. So Atascadero Loaves and Fishes and the city of Atascadero have only made application to the city of Atascadero. ECHO has actually applied to Paso Robles for $25,000 and SLO County for $10,937 for including the $8,000 they've been applied here, totals $43,937. The Paso Robles recommended $8,900 to ECHO, and the city of SLO County has not actually had their draft recommendations. That'll occur next week. And then CASA has applied to Paso Robles, Slo City, Slo County, and Morro Bay for $8,000 each. Get my notes here. And the Paso Robles actually did not award any money to CASA. However, they did award $8,900 to another applicant that may or may not meet the eligibility requirements. It's sort of iffy right now based on that, you know, low to moderate income requirement. So if they do not meet that requirement, it'll likely default to CASA. But we don't really know this status until later on. And then Transitions actually applied to Paso Robles for $1,500, Slo City for $8,000, and the county for $26,000, which would total, with our $1,500, $37,000. And City of Paso Robles did recommend $1,500 to Transition, and that the Slo City was zero on that. Slo City actually made all their 2016 funding available to their local homeless shelter. So with that, I can take any questions, and we're prepared to, operate this if the council so desires, like we did last year, where we can throw up the spreadsheet. Jerry has offered her assistance and plugging in numbers as need be, and we can go from there.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to begin with council questions, and I do want to keep it just to council questions of staff, because I do want to open it up to the public before we get into any deliberation or thoughts on this, in case there's some public input that might have an impact on our thinking. So are there any questions of staff before I open it up to the public? Yes.
Can't remember, but the public facilities, is there any leeway in that, or is that a certain percentage that has to be taken out?
No, there's not a max on that, but there's maxes on the other, the administration and the public.
I thought last year that there had to be a certain percentage and that couldn't be, but that number there can be adjusted.
Was that yes. Public facilities or public services?
Yeah, public facilities.
Public facilities can be adjusted.
Okay, thank you.
Any other council questions? Go ahead.
I have a question about the administration fees. I know that Atascadero in the past, when they were administering their own, took the full amount. Is this split equally between the county and the city? That seems like the county is adding on and it's actually larger than in the past.
The county takes 13%, and then the city has that last 7%. They are going to be more involved as the projects progress. For instance, the barrier removal projects, they'll be a little more involved in that. The administrating of the public services grants, they'll be more involved in that. So our involvement has actually lessened quite a bit with the county taking over the administration. And then also the other thing is with these higher minimum grant applications of $8,000 cumulatively in the county, there's less actual applications and grants to administer. So that has kind of dropped some of the work involved as well in overseeing.
Well, what I'm trying to get at, we have no control over the 13% that the county will get, but are we really doing 7% worth of work since they're doing the lion's share of this?
It's hard saying. I mean, it's we probably are, actually. I would say we are just from these meetings as tonight, and then we need to come back. We'll come back again with the final recommendations, just the paperwork, the reporting, just communicating with the county. I'd say we're doing easily 7% or more.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'm going to open it up to the public. Any member of the public wishing to speak on this agenda item? Seeing no one approach, we'll bring it back to council for deliberation. I think, let me try to see if we can do a couple things by consensus. I think Councilman Kelly started down this track. I would assume there's going to be a desire that the full $23,871 goes to public services. That's the maximum that can go in that area. So we could begin by deducting some off of the public facilities, perhaps. If that works out, we can start seeing how to spread that $23,871 between the applicants. So is that, by consensus, would folks...
I think it's already worked out.
Is it pretty much... it looked to me like... Yeah, I think with that... If you fund the administrative cost of 20% and a $23,871, does that leave the full $110 for... No, you'd have to reduce that, I believe, wouldn't you? Yeah, so we go ahead with that. Is there a consensus by council? We start there. Okay, so you might just, on the consensus column, we can put in that dollar amount for the public facilities. Hey, Brian, is that right? Thank you. Okay, let me see if we can't do a couple other by consensus, and then we can get into some discussion. We've always prioritized ECHO as our homegrown organization, and hey, we're Greyhounds. We're going to let Paso beat us. I'm thinking we want to allocate the full $8,000 for ECHO. Is there any disagreement on that?
Actually, I do disagree because ECHO actually had funding from Paso, so I just went a little bit less and gave full funding to two other sources. That way, ECHO is covered and the other two sources will be covered as well.
Okay, I'm looking at many of these apply to many cities, whereas ECHO and Atascadero Loaves and Fishes are primarily serving Atascadero and may not be getting funds from many other opportunities. But since we don't have consensus on that, we may have to come back.
Didn't we do that last year? I think we came in a little less for ECHO, then it got supplemented by Paso Robles. So,
right.
You know, as long as we meet the criteria, I think that would work for me, so we can work on some of the other ones there, make sure they get adequate
money. I agree
money.
With that. We have a grand total of $23,871 times 3 is $24,000. We don't quite make the cut. So I'd like to take the small amount that would be less, approximately.
Why don't we go ahead then?
$30.
Since you have the floor, why don't you just, would you like to go down the Councilmember Fonzie column and throw in some numbers and we'll work our way right on through?
Okay. What is 24,000 minus 23,871?
Or if anyone else has numbers ready to go, okay. Why don't we come back to you, Councilwoman Fonzie, because, of course, our CPA, Ms. Moreno, has got it all figured out. The Moreno column. Go ahead.
Starting with Loaves and Fishes, 10,000. Youth Activity Scholarships, 10,000. ECHO, 3,871.
Okay, any other council member ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Go ahead, Councilman Sturtevant.
Loaves and Fishes, 8,000. The Youth Scholarships, 8,000. And ECHO, 7,871.
Okay, Councilmember Fonzie, are you ready?
Yes, Loaves and Fishes, 8,000. Youth Scholarships, 8,000. And Homeless Shelter would be 7,871.
Okay, Councilman Kelly, are you ready?
You can put me there, too.
Same as Councilwoman Fonzie?
Sturdivant Fonzie, yes.
Okay. Well, I think it's going to be unanimous that CASA is going to get zero, and I assume that's because they are a countywide organization applying to many and have many other resources. So I think we could zero out the CASA column by consensus. I assume we have agreement on that. Just so the consensus column, I think you can put zero there. You gave me $37,500. Great. Wait a minute.
You guys got to know how to do it. Finance committee. Finance committee.
Okay, I think if you go over to the column under consensus, we've agreed to put maybe it's not going to work that way. Am I confusing?
Probably.
Okay. Well, let me take an opportunity to, well, we're not there at consensus yet. I'm just saying for the one, we agree on zero, but we'll see.
I don't know, you got three there.
Yeah, I'm always optimistic. I did want to make a pitch for transitions, low mental health, in that we have two transitions facilities in Atascadero, and it is countywide. It seems like that is a small portion that we could contribute, and I'd like to see something go in that direction. But since no one wants to make eye contact with me, I'll take that as go ahead. I think I'm going to join Councilman Sturdivant and Fonzie and Kelly. It looks like that is going to be the numbers that make it work. So I think that's probably the best we're going to do on consensus. You want to make a final argument there, Councilwoman Moreno?
I'm not disappointed either way. My only thought was that the first two, their only appeal is to the city of Atascadero. And even Loaves and Fishes will get outside donations. When it comes to youth activity scholarships, there's no other donations coming in for those. So I think, that's important, and we're always looking for things for our youth to be able to do in town, and I think that's an important value that we have. And so, if either of those were to get a little bit more, I would like the youth activity scholarships, just because there will be absolutely no other funding other than what comes from the CDBG, at least that I know of.
Any other discussion?
Do we know how much the youth scholarship was last year?
What did we fund last year for youth scholarship?
I believe we funded $8,000 for the youth scholarship. And just as an aside, I think the police association also does raise funding that they will donate toward the scholarships as well.
Okay, that's nice to know.
Thank you. If there's no other discussion, I would entertain a motion for a consensus column. That we adopt the 8-8 and the 7-8-7-1. Is anyone prepared to make a motion to that effect?
I make a motion that for the consensus column for Loaves and Fishes, we would give $8,000. For the youth scholarships would be $8,000. For ECHO would be $7,871, and that would be it.
Okay, we have a motion.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilman Kelly. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Anything else you need from the council on this item?
Not at this point. The county will meet towards the end of January, and then once they meet and all this is hashed out, we'll come back with the final recommendations.
Thank you. Next agenda item is a management report, proposed resolution adopting a policy regarding conditions, covenants, and restrictions for projects constructed by in the city. Is there any desire for a brief break, or do we want to keep pushing forward at this time? Look to the council. We okay? We'll continue on, and we'll ask staff. I believe our city attorney is making the presentation.
Yes, that's correct. In this item, you're being presented with a draft resolution considering for your consideration that would adopt a policy regarding conditions, covenants, and restrictions for projects that are constructed within the city. By way of background, the city was requested by some residents of the Oak Ridge Estates project, also known as 3F Meadows Residential Project, requesting a review of the CCNRs and a determination of what actions, if any, could be taken by the City Council with respect to those CCNRs. In terms of history, we know that the CCNRs for the Oak Ridge project was originally adopted in 2003, and then since that time there were a number of amendments that are recited for you in the staff report. We also know that on November 13th of 2013 that the Bureau of Real Estate of the State of California issued its final report, referred to as the BRE Public Report, which is attachment 2 in your packet. On September 8th, 2015, the City Council was requested by certain residents to determine what actions could be taken by the Council, and at that time the Council did direct staff to bring back to a future Council agenda the options that were available. With respect to our analysis of the Oak Ridge Estates project and those CCNRs, we've determined that the only action that could be taken by the City Council with respect to those CCNRs would be consideration of a policy set forth in the resolution, which is attachment 1 in your packet. We know that the CCNRs for this project included in Section 2 of Article 7 certain specific types of amendments that would require city approval. There was no designation in the CCNRs as to whether that meant approval by city staff or the city council, and it has been the practice of the city up until tonight for those approvals to be at the staff level. Those specific areas where those amendments would require city approval in the Oak Ridge Estate CCNRs are identified in your agenda packet. They are the Article 3, which are use restrictions, Article 5, which are architectural design and construction standards, Article 6, which is nuisance enforcement, and finally Article 7, which is the amendment revocation process requiring the approvals that I had mentioned just a moment ago. So what the city can do, as set forth in the resolution that's before you, is to review those amendments that fall within those categories and to determine whether or not they are consistent with the project entitlements and with the city's municipal code. And as I had indicated previously, the current practice of the city is for the city staff to make those determinations. We do discuss in the staff report the city's ability to impose restrictions in CCNRs as set forth in the Subdivision Map Act, and specifically reference you to applicable provisions of both the California Government Code as well as the Civil Code. With respect to the approval process, as the council is aware from projects that have come before you in the past, there are conditions of approval which may be imposed by the city in connection with a tentative tract map, which include conditions relating to such things as parking spaces, landscape requirements, and the like. And it is a common practice that these conditions are to be reflected in the CCNRs with the statement that they cannot be amended without the prior consent of the appropriate agency. So in response to the issue of what the authority is of the BRE, Bureau of Real Estate, we quoted in the staff report an excerpt from that brochure which talks about common interest developments, and it does say, among other things, that once the sales have commenced for the project, that the departments, meaning the Bureau of Real Estate, jurisdiction is limited to the subdivider's obligations under the public report, which does not include intervention in association disputes. Presently, there is no state or local agency that directly regulates associations or their members. As mentioned in the staff report, we do have certain legal principles that apply here. They are recited, as I mentioned, including the CCNR provisions, which set forth how the CCNRs are to be amended. In terms of legal authority, there is no legal authority that the city has, either under the California Constitution, statutes, or any case law, that allows the city to require that the developer obtain approval for projects other than, or amendments to CCNRs, other than as stated in those CCNRs. The city can withhold approval of CCNR amendments if they do not comply with the conditions of approval for the project. So with that, let me reference you to the draft resolution that is in your packet. It begins on page 63. It is a draft resolution of the City Council of the City of Atascadero adopting a policy regarding conditions, covenants, and restrictions for projects constructed within the city. We include certain whereas clauses within the resolution that are consistent with the comments I've made thus far in this report. And then there's four sections that are set forth in the resolution, which I'll just summarize briefly here. Section 1 applies to projects that are approved after the adoption of this resolution, and it would require that the CCNRs be submitted to the Community Development Director for review to ensure consistency with the project entitlements in the City Municipal Code, which is consistent, as I mentioned, with the city's current practice. Section 2 of the resolution would provide that both before and after the adoption of this resolution, that any CCNRs which require an amendment must be include provisions which are not inconsistent with the project entitlements or the city's municipal code. Section 3, which applies after the adoption of this resolution, provides that the CCNRs must include a provision that any person proposing an amendment to the CCNRs must give at least 30 days written notice to all property owners within the project of the proposed amendment. This is new, a new policy that does not currently exist. If this resolution is adopted, then that would be a requirement that could be imposed. Section 4 is also new. It's beyond what the city's current policy provides. And in Section 4, it states that any project approved before or after the adoption of the resolution, if those CCNRs have a provision that requires approval by the city, that the initial approval would come from the Community Development Director to review to ensure consistency with project entitlements and the city's municipal code, and the director would then issue a finding on whether they in fact are consistent, and that finding is then transmitted by the city to the person that has proposed the amendment.
Mr. City Attorney, if yes. I could interrupt just for a moment. I'd like to have the overhead either be referencing what's on the agenda or just have that off rather than screening through other items. At least that's what's on our screens. So, is that possible to correct? I'd like to get us back on so we're focused on one item anyway, and then maybe you might want to just briefly restate or summarize those two new items you just mentioned and then continue on with your presentation, and we'll let staff work away at trying to get that overhead. We'll just turn these off here. You've got it off up above. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I can be glad to accommodate that. On Section 3, this is a new provision would require that CCNRs, they must include a provision that any person or entity proposing an amendment to the CCNRs must give at least 30 days written notice to all property owners within the project of the proposed amendment. So that is Section 3. Section 4 is that for any project that has been approved by the city either before or after this resolution, and for which the proposed amendment is one that requires city approval, that initial city approval would come from the what would happen is it would be submitted to the community development director to review to ensure consistency with the project entitlements and the municipal code. That the community development director then would issue a finding on whether, in fact, those the proposed amendment is consistent with the city's project entitlements that were issued and the city's municipal code. And then that finding is submitted by the city to the person that proposed the amendment. Then there's a series of rules that would apply under this policy. They are listed as A through E. I'll call it Rule A, is that the written notice is to be sent to all property owners in the project of the finding that's been made by the community development director. B, and I'm not going to read the entire rule, it's in the packet, but I'm just giving you kind of an overview of it. Provision B is that within 15 days of the receipt of the notice, that they there may be an appeal to the city council of the finding by the community development director to be filed with the city clerk. That within upon receipt of it, and the appeal could be filed by either the property owners or by the developer, depends upon who is submitting the amendment. And then, whichever one is not satisfied with the ruling by the or the finding by the community development director could appeal. Then, upon receipt of the appeal, the city clerk is to set a hearing before the city council within 45 days, and the council is then to review the amendment to determine consistency. And that, in terms of the procedures for the appeal, that could be something that can be you can request the city attorney to provide those to you at the time of the hearing on the appeal. So that's the summary of the resolution, and probably a little bit more than a summary, gave quite a bit of detail. I'm prepared to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Before we go on, again, normally we're able to show up on the screen the agenda item. Are we going to be able to get that where it's, for example, showing the resolution when it comes to it up on the screen rather than cycling through?
Sure, we can do that.
Okay, and I would think you might want to do that. And I did want to make sure everyone in the audience has a copy of this council item. So I'm concerned that normally we would have that up on the screen as we're walking through, and or I want to make sure everyone has this to reference.
I think that's usually when staff does a PowerPoint, and we have that up there. So we would have to create something because I don't believe that that was created. So we will
Have this,
work on that.
Okay, we don't have this particular item. We can just show
up on
the screen.
We don't have this PowerPoint, but we can probably try and, I'm looking at Luke. You can throw something, you can throw one slide up for us, right?
Yeah, certainly the item we're going to be, the draft resolution, it'd be nice to have that if we were able to get to that. I think maybe, let me check with staff, is that something that's going to take some amount of time or that can, so I'm going to go ahead and take a brief break. We'll go ahead and, would you like 5 minutes, 10 minutes? 5 minutes. We're going to take a 5 minute break because I want everyone to have access to what we're talking about here on the screen. Thank you. staff back to the dais, and my apologies to the public for a little bit of reorganization. Normally, when a report is done by the planning department, they have overheads, and since this was a report from the city attorney, I don't think they had this prepared, but we always like to have before us exactly what we're voting on so that the public at home as well as in the audience can see exactly what we're looking at up here and can ask questions accordingly. And I also apologize to you in the audience where I know there was some little discussion during the break, and we try to have as much discussion as part of the public record. We're on TV, and it's better that that way everyone at home can participate or can review, and we have a good record of what we're deliberating on. So have you concluded your report, Mr. City Attorney?
Well, I have, but now that the resolution that I would summarized is on the board, what you're seeing is the first page of it, which is sections of the recitals, the whereas clauses, and then sections 1, 2, and 3, and the beginning of section 4. And then on the second page is the sections A through E to section 4 that I summarized in my oral comments before the break. And I have completed my presentation, and I can answer questions if you have any.
Thank you. So the format will be, of course, council will ask questions of staff, and we won't get into any deliberation or decision-making yet. And after any questions we have about staff's presentation, we'll open it up to the public, and you can address the council and ask any questions you have, make any statements you wish, and then at that time we'll close public comment, bring it back to the council, and that's where we could well make a decision, or we could put this off with a request for more information. So with that, I'm going to first look to staff. I would suggest we use the lights, as some council members already have. So first we have questions from Councilwoman Fonzi, followed by Councilwoman Moreno.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have some questions for the city attorney regarding A through E on the second page of the resolution. It says an A, written notice shall be sent to all property owners. When you say sent, do you mean mailed? Do you mean emailed? Do you mean noticed in the paper? Could you be more specific what your intent was so that we can pin this down?
Well, I didn't want to limit the method of sending, so it could be by email or it could be by a letter. I think either way would be acceptable.
Well, the reason I ask that is because in item B, it says within 15 days of receipt, there's no way to confirm receipt unless you sent it with a certified mail or some other way to get the receipt.
Under the law, a letter is presumed received following mailing. I mean, we could say within 15 calendar days of the sending of the notice rather than receipt of the notice.
Okay, very good. And that would also be in C, it has the word receipt. I just want to make sure we don't have any legal issues down the road if it's said that they didn't receive it.
No, that's a good point. We could say within 15 days of sending of the notice.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Councilman Fonzi? Okay, Councilman Moreno, followed by Councilman Kelly.
Mr. City Attorney, number four, you said that that differs from what we do now. So could you explain the difference in number four?
Sure.
From our current policy? Thank you.
Well, the current policy is, and the current practice is, that if the CCNRs require approval by the city, which the ones for Oak Ridge do for those types of amendments that I mentioned earlier, it goes to city staff, and then the staff will approve the proposed amendment. What we've done here is to say that basically that the community development director, we're more specific, if you will. So it's going to be the community development director will be the one who will make a finding as to whether there's consistency with the project entitlements in the city's municipal code. So that is a little more specific than what we currently have. And the second way that Section 4 is different is that any party can file an appeal to the City Council of the finding that was made by the Community Development Director, which is not a current practice of the city.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Kelly.
Yes. Section number 3 addresses that any amendment to the CCNRs must be given at least 30 days. I have a problem with that because that kind of opens the door to colors of painting, landscaping, stuff that I don't think the city has any business doing with. I don't know if the verbiage can be changed to go down to be consistent with project entitlements in the city's municipal code.
Well, the problem is then you'd have to differentiate between which amendments to the CCNRs need to be submitted with advance notice and which ones don't, if there's going to be some criteria that you establish. So the purpose of Section 3 is, because I know there were some concerns by the residents of Oak Ridge, is that they wanted to be notified of proposed amendments to the CCNRs. So in recognition of that concern that was expressed, we included Section 3 so that whatever the amendment is, they're aware of it before the amendment is actually approved.
Okay. And then in the back, number B, I think there might be a clarification there that when you mention three property owners or a majority of the property owners, that is, if it's a large subdivision that, say, consists of 80 or 100 lots, that each lot is considered a separate property owner by the developer, so he would still have control of the voting amendments. Or like in a lot of CCNRs, at some point, once 51% of the lots are sold, there's an opportunity to form a homeowners association and to address this as a group.
Well, the reason why it reads the way it does is that rather than have a single person file the appeal, and because when an appeal is filed, then there needs to be a staff report generated. It needs to come before the council. So there was a desire to, or that the intent, if you will, of this section was to at least show that there was some support to have the appeal presented to the council. So when it says three property owners or a majority of the property owners, whichever is less, you could then, in theory, have three property owners file the appeal, even if you had 10 property owners. And if, in the case that you've given, if the developer still retains, you know, a majority of the property, unless there's only two or fewer other property owners, the remaining could file the appeal.
Well, I'm just kind of getting at, if there's 80 properties and he sold five, and three people want to make some changes, and he still has 75 properties, and he needs to make some adjustments to that, that he still has complete control to do that, unless it addresses a city ordinance or a zoning issue.
Okay, but in that hypothetical, if there's 80 lots and the developer still holds title to 75 of them, that means you have five other property owners. If there's a proposed amendment, let's say by the developer, to do X, and three of the five property owners wish to appeal that, under this Section B, they could do that.
I don't know if I agree with that, because you basically really have 80 property owners on that. So I guess
you do.
We can talk.
Councilman Kelly, yeah, and I think that may be getting into some discussion on the items. If we keep it to questions regarding the items, that would be great. Any other questions, Councilman Kelly? Back to Councilman Moreno.
For the city attorney, what happens if somebody tries to appeal something that is not, I mean, because we're saying that it's something where the community development director looks at it to make sure it's consistent with, you know, whether it's noise, you know, the different things that are under our jurisdiction. And if somebody is trying to appeal something else that isn't under
our jurisdiction, how will that be handled?
Well, there would be no basis to appeal. The appeal rights are set forth in this resolution. If the attempt is made to file an appeal that doesn't come within the terms of the resolution, then it would be treated as improper appeal, if you will, and then it would not be acted upon. And the person filing the appeal would certainly be notified as to the basis for why it was not being processed.
Other council questions? Councilwoman Fonzie.
I know that there are four sections that you gave us over which the city has review possibilities that would go to the community development director, but some of these seem rather unclear. For instance, architectural design and construction standards, let's say CC&Rs go out, they say you can only paint your house pink. Would this be one that could come back to us, for instance, or not?
Well, I'm assuming that you're referring to the specific articles in
Article
the...
Article 5.
Yeah, in the Oak Ridge CC&Rs that require city approval. The Article 3 on the use restrictions, Article 5 on the architectural design and construction standards. So if there was an amendment being proposed to any of those sections, including Article 5, then that would require approval, a finding by the community development director that the proposed change is consistent with the project approvals and the city's municipal code. And then if someone was dissatisfied with that finding, there could then be an appeal filed to the city council. So I'm not sure if that answered your question or not.
Not really.
Okay, so there may be...
So architectural considerations are rather vague. That term isn't something you can easily pin down. You have some subsections there regarding fencing and so forth. We don't want to really have this come back if somebody builds their fence too tall or whatever it may be. Would that be appealable to the city council?
Yes. As the resolution is now written, any CC&R amendment that would otherwise require city approval goes through this process that's in Section 4. The current process would be that it would be approved at the staff level. The concerns that were being expressed by the property owners, as we heard, I believe, on September 8th, was, and based on comments from council, that the council wanted at least to provide, have the opportunity to have those types of CC&R amendments have a process beyond just approval at the staff level. So, yes, these are the CC&Rs, the amendments that require approval. So, you know, the city didn't write these CC&Rs. They were written by the developer. And then these are what they are. And those are the ones that would require city approval or a finding here by the community development director. So unless you wanted to exclude, you certainly have the authority, if you wish, to narrow Section 4 and say that it doesn't apply to certain types of amendments to the CC&Rs if you wanted to do that. I made it broad to include all CC&R amendments that would require city approval are going to be subject to this resolution. You, as a council, could certainly narrow that field to to CC&R amendments of a lesser number.
I think Oak Ridge Estates in particular had some concerns about road maintenance costs, and those really aren't in those articles, correct?
That's correct.
Thank you.
So this might fall under the category of be careful of what you ask for, and I think you did respond to council's request to have some kind of a review process. I think one important point is you included that all the residents will be notified of any changes, so that's clearly defined. And then if there's an appeal, it's first appealed to the planning department, and we've designated who received that appeal for review, and that's clear, a little clearer than it was. I would assume then if there's an appeal to the planning department's director by three or more persons, then that could come towards the council, but I would assume that the council could have the option to decline to review, just like a judge might decline to review a case, and so the planning commission, the director's opinion stands, and that would kind of give the opportunity that if it's something that, you know, it's a fence or something that, you know, someone is just making a point that, you know, it doesn't seem to be an issue that warrants a council agendized item, it could be maybe handled in a way without a whole staff report. Maybe there's a step to that effect. But I think the council did want some way that there would be an easy way to appeal to the council if there was a significant substantive issue. And do you see any way in there that maybe there's another step that we can insert that, such as a recommendation by the community development director on a consent calendar item that this, this request for council review be denied based on something, or do you have any suggestions? I think you kind of got the sense that we have in mind two categories of items, some that seem to be not as significant that wouldn't warrant a council hearing, or maybe there's just no way to differentiate. Any thoughts on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
My thought is that I could draft some language which would be similar to an appeal in court from the Court of Appeal to, let's say, the California Supreme Court. It's called a petition for review, and then the California Supreme Court only grants like 5% of those. I'm not saying that that's how many you would grant, but they do have the authority to either hear the appeal or not, because there's, you know, hundreds if not thousands of potential appeals, and they need that to control their docket. So I could draft some language that would have a opportunity for the community development director to present a staff report to the council recommending that the council find that this is not an appeal that the council wishes to hear, and that the decision that the council will defer, if you will, to the decision, to the finding that was made by the community development director. So I could draft language. There's precedent for that. The U.S. Supreme Court has the same practice. They don't hear every case that someone wants them to hear. If it goes through a federal court of appeal, and then it's called a petition for certiorari, goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, they review the thousands that they receive, and then they decide which ones they want to hear.
So I think I got that idea, and I think we're just considering ways to kind of address our concerns. Might be a parallel. I'm trying to avoid a lot of extra work if it's something that's not warranting a whole council presentation. So I'm thinking the community development director is already going to have a response. He's made a decision based on an appeal. So there's going to be information available. There's an opportunity, maybe a form that someone can submit along with that that says, I want to appeal this for some reason. And with that information, could it go to something like the design review committee, and they simply look at that and say, yeah, that's worthy of going to a council full hearing, or nope, we don't need to look at that further. It gives an opportunity for some council review, but I'm trying to avoid a lot of staff work for what could be a number of items like fencing. You know, we're not normally going to get involved with that. If it's a serious road issue like has been brought up, well, that's something council might want. Is something like that a possibility?
Well, most of the appeals that I've seen from a decision that's been made at the director level go either to the Planning Commission or here we've had it go straight to the City Council. If we did have this go to some other body than the council as an initial review process, then the question would be, do they have the final authority to decide whether or not the appeal is going to be prosecuted any further than their level? Yeah. Or would the person who's objecting to the amendment have the opportunity to present that to the council? Right. So there is a process that, that could be drafted, and it, it would tend to, because like the example that was given a moment ago about having the community development director prepare a report to say whether or not the appeal should be granted or not. I mean, they're still drafting a report, and they're going to have to kind of explain the background of what it is and give a recommendation as to whether the appeal should or shouldn't be accepted by the council. And by the time that effort has gone in, then you might as well just have the appeal heard, frankly.
Yeah, I think that's our concern, that, and maybe when we get to public comment, I think that's, I'm sure, on every council member's mind. There's a number of items that don't seem to be what we initially had in mind for an appeal item. And if there's a way to differentiate, we may have to just struggle with that during deliberation. But thank you for your thoughts on that. I'll move on with council questions. Councilman Kelly.
Yes. I kind of go along with Tom. I don't want to create a whole bunch of work and really get into the real estate business. What I'm getting out of this is the only really legal authority that we have is for a zoning change or an ordinance violation. Is that correct?
Well, the legal authority you have is if there would be an attempt to amend the CC&Rs in a manner that would be inconsistent with the project entitlements or inconsistent with the city's codes. A developer cannot proceed. But let's say you had condition X and they wanted to do something with their CC&Rs that was going to allow them to do something that was inconsistent with condition X. Well, they can't do that. Oftentimes that'll come to my office and I'll write a letter to the developer saying, you know, that could be inconsistent with the conditions of approval, so you must proceed consistent with the conditions of approval. And so we could do it that way, or we can go through this resolution. My understanding from the direction that we received on September 8th was that for those CC&Rs which currently require city approval, that the council wanted to know if there was an opportunity for council to have input with respect to that approval process, which under the current city's practice is done at the staff level. So either it remains at the staff level, as is the current practice, and without this resolution, or you consider this resolution or some modification to it, which would then engage the council as a hearing body for some types of amendments to the CC&Rs. So those are your choices. You either leave the system the way it is or you change it. And if you're going to change it, then we would look for your direction as to how you want to change. We presented this resolution based on what we heard on September 8th with respect to the comments that came to us from council at that time.
I think I'll wait till discussion later.
Okay. Well, let me follow up on Councilman Kelly's thought on that, though, with the particular items that are under our jurisdiction. There's an attempt to make a change to something under our jurisdiction. Whether we change this ordinance or not, wouldn't that be something that could be appealed to the council, or the council could intervene by definition because it is under our jurisdiction?
Well, I think that the purpose of the resolution was to provide a written direction as to how the city was going to treat CC&R amendments. There are conditions of approval currently, as I understand it, that do specify certain requirements with respect to the conditions, the CC&Rs. Let's see where I can find that. Yeah, this is under current city practice, which is on page 61 of the agenda report. Am I on the right page? Okay, that's helpful. And it describes the current city practice, which is to include a standard condition in the conditions of approval. It requires the applicant to submit the CCNRs for review and approval by the Community Development Department, and then there are certain provisions that are required in those CCNRs relating to access, parking, maintenance of the individual units, trash receptacles, and review and approval for changes that relate to those requirements, which is pretty similar to what we've been talking about this evening. So that's the city's current practice, and it's done at the staff level. The major difference between what your current practice is and what this resolution proposes is that there would be a role for the city council in connection with certain CCNR amendments that presently are handled at the staff level. If the council wishes to become engaged, at least to have the opportunity to become engaged in that process, then if the person who is objecting, let's say, to the CCNR amendment receives the finding from the community development director that finds that it's consistent with the conditions of approval, wishes to have the council review the item, they can file an appeal to the council. That's the way it's written now, and it's been written that way, and, as I say, consistent with what we understood the direction, your direction on September 8th. If you want this evening, you could either not take action and not adopt this resolution and allow the city's current practice to proceed as is, or you could adopt this resolution as it's written, or a third choice would be to modify the resolution in some manner. And if you wanted to have some interim step before it came to the council, you can do that, but then you have other levels of the city, either the Design Review Committee or the Planning Commission, some other body that hears it before you do. So those are all opportunities that are available. We can write it however you want it to be written. We wrote it this way.
Thank you. And just in case my button system is not working as it should, I've got Councilman Kelly followed by Councilman Fonzie. Go ahead.
Just as an example, I don't know if you can answer this or if you want to, the Oak Ridge Estates incident that we have regarding the amount of money that people will have to pay per lot for the road repairs, if that got brought back to the city council for debate, we really don't have any authority to tell the developer how to formulate his payment plans for road cost recovery, do we? Anything that would be enforceable?
Only if what was being proposed was inconsistent with the conditions of approval or the city's municipal code. PD 11 was the ordinance that was adopted in connection with the 3F Meadows project, and that has certain improvements, for example, that are called for. If there was a proposed amendment to the CCNRs that was going to be inconsistent with what those project approvals required, then the answer is yes, that would be something that you would have authority to direct the developer to not take that action. But absent an inconsistency with the project entitlements or your municipal code, you don't have the authority to take action.
Councilwoman Fonzie.
So judging from the questions that have been asked, it's fairly clear that we really legally can't do what we would like to do to notify homeowners that are in a particular situation now at Oak Ridge Estates. So I would ask if there is perhaps a fourth possibility. You mentioned three, that having to do with leaving it alone, doing the resolution or modifying the resolution. But if we were to have something that went to, let's say, the Board of Realtors, it would be some kind of a disclosure regarding homeowners associations and the need for homeowners when they purchase their home to carefully review the CCNRs and understand that there can be monetary repercussions that result from CCNR changes, something along that line?
My understanding on that is that there are some government agencies that do have such requirements. I would have to research that to get details as to what could be done in terms of a disclosure statement, and that's what I understand you're describing, that would be required to be included in the sales transaction.
Thank you.
I believe that there's already some language that's included in the BRE report, which is attachment 2 in your packet. Its page begins at page 67, and on page 67 it says there's a box there that says consumer information, and the sentence that's in bold language at the bottom of that on the first page says, read the entire report on the following pages before contracting to buy or lease an interest in this subdivision. And then on the next page, 68, in capital letters and bold language, it says, before signing, you should read and thoroughly understand all sales, contract, and loan documents. If you do not understand the terms of the contract or loan documents, you may wish to consider consulting with your own attorney before entering into a contract to purchase the property. So the BRE already has in their report, if you want to call it disclosure language or cautionary language, with respect to putting the buyer on notice of the need to review the documents that are being presented as part of the transaction. If the council's direction is to come back to you with some suggested process for the city to require a disclosure statement to be included somehow in the sale or lease of property, we can certainly do that.
Councilman Kelly.
Yes, I did submit a sample disclosure, and that is somewhat of a common practice within cities in this county. It's not perfect, but maybe you might want to read it so the other council members could kind of see what kind of disclosure could be included in any property transaction within the city limits of Atascadero.
You meant read it out loud? Okay. This is the city of Atascadero. This is a document that Councilmember Kelly had provided to me before the council meeting tonight. It's the City of Atascadero, CCNR's disclosure, covenants, conditions, and restrictions. The City of Atascadero does not regulate or enforce CCNRs that are associated with any properties within the city limits of Atascadero. It is highly recommended that you become familiar with any covenants, conditions, and restrictions that have been placed on any properties within the city limits of Atascadero prior to closing any escrow on future property transactions, and then there's signature lines for the buyer. So we can check to see if there are other agencies that require this, which I understand there are, based on the comments that Councilmember Kelly made to me earlier. I've not done any independent research on that to know. But we could certainly have staff check with their peers at some of the other, with the county or with some of the adjoining cities, to see if they have some similar type of disclosure requirement. And if you wanted one, we could draft one and bring it back to you.
And thank you. And of course, something like that would have no impact on prior projects. That would be for any future projects.
Yes.
Thank you. Any other council questions before we move to the public? Seeing none, I'll open it up to the public and ask anyone to please come forward, just state your name, and comment, ask questions, whatever you would wish. We might have to make a few battery modifications here. Welcome.
Seems to work. Yeah, my name is Greg Municata. I'm the leader of the homeowners at Oak Ridge Estates. We just got all this paper here tonight, so we really haven't had a chance to review it carefully. What I'd like to ask you to do first is to hold off on any judgment tonight on this resolution, maybe table it for the next meeting, during which interval we will get back to you with any concerns or compliments regarding this package. I think it's important to remember why we first approached you all. Okay, what was our concern? Our concern was that the developer at Oak Ridge Estates had unilaterally changed the rules. He changed the CC&Rs without any notice to homeowners and without any homeowner participation or vote. Okay? This was brutal. In the specific instance, he was changing the obligations of the homeowners for road maintenance. He changed the rules from everybody owning a lot in the development having an equal share in the cost of road maintenance to one of only the homeowners, only the people that had bought homes in the development were having an obligation to pay for road maintenance. So the 85 odd lots that the developer owned were basically shielded from, or their obligation was eliminated. The developer's obligation to pay was eliminated, and the entire burden was placed on the homeowners. Okay, this was done in 2012, 2013. Okay, that's bad enough. Our bigger concern is the next time he chooses to unilaterally change the CC&Rs. Okay, if he's allowed to get away with what he did in 2012 and 13, he's given free license to do whatever he wants in the future. And the future assessments, whatever they may relate to, could be a lot worse than what we're currently subject to. What I've heard tonight, this resolution doesn't seem to address that concern at all. Okay, I would ask your attorney, Brian Pirick, because it's not clear to me, what body, who makes the decision on approval of CC&R amendments that come before the city? Okay, I know your community development director would make a finding, but who approves the amendment? Brian?
We address all the questions to the council. We'll accumulate all those questions and address them together. So continue with any questions you have or comments.
Okay. That's fine. Secondarily, I would ask, what criteria would that person or body use to decide whether or not to approve a particular amendment? If the answer to that is...
Continue on.
Consistency with the conditions of approval, then we're no different with the resolution than we are today. Again, we've imposed, if you adopt the resolution, you've imposed a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of procedural hassle, a lot of overhead, but it doesn't seem to me that you've changed anything meaningfully. You've got a notification, which is nice, a notification to homeowners. You've got an appeal process, which I guess is nice. But if you end up being the decision makers, the council, as you should be, if you're constrained by the conditions of approval as the criterion for approval, then it pretty much doesn't matter what's said in the appeal. You're going back to the same thing, again, which I have a problem with, as you know. Another question. There's a reference to entitlements, and I'm wondering if that's the same thing as the conditions of approval. Are the terms being used in the same way? Because it's confusing to me. Just a question. Another question, in item 4, I think it is, it talks about, let's see, I just stole this from your binder, so forgive me if that was breaking the law.
We don't usually have folks admitting to stealing in front of the police chief, but continue on. We give you permission tonight.
Yeah. Okay, I can't find it right now, but essentially it referred to projects that were approved before and after adoption of the resolution. And I wondered if by adopting the resolution, it would be effective retroactively.
Let me answer that. No, yeah. I am pretty darn sure of that. But continue on with your.
I just wanted to ask the question.
Yeah, we can't apply any rules to something that's occurred in the past. That I'm sure of.
Okay.
We would do a lot of things if we could do that, but we can't.
Ah, the hindsight.
So continue on.
Right. Okay. Well, hypothetically, if the homeowners at Oak Ridge Estates are successful in having this set of amendments that were adopted in 2012 and 13 reversed in court, okay, and the developer were to bring those same amendments back to you, that would be a fresh start, right? and it would be subject to the resolution if you adopted it?
I believe the answer is no, but I'm going to ask our city attorney to address all that, because, we'll try to be as clear as we can. It's as frustrating to us all, but please answer, get your questions on the record. We'll try to go through those the best we can. I think they've been addressed in the past, but we're going to address it as part of the record tonight. I do want to move on to anyone else who would like to speak. We're giving a little leeway to you because I know you've worked hard on this.
That's all I had at this point, but again, I'd like the time to review it and give the feedback.
Thank you. And if you think of something else, I'm not going to close public comment until we have all the questions out. So keep thinking. I'll ask anyone else to come forward. And we do try to keep to 3 minutes. I'm going to not be too tough on that, but just be as clear as you can. And you don't need to repeat a question. If it's already in the record, we will address it. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, council persons, my name is Don Ritter, and I'm the planning consultant for Darren Shetler, a developer at Castle Rock, developer of Oak Ridge Estates. First of all, I'd like to apologize to council for this situation that it's come this far. There's no reason why concerns about the Oak Ridge Road Maintenance Program could not have been addressed in a cooperative effort by both parties if both sides were equally committed to a mutually beneficial and acceptable resolution. However, that's not been the case, and unfortunately, the city is now being dragged into the fray. As we all know, the original CC&Rs for Oak Ridge provided for equal share in the responsibility and cost for road maintenance. However, they contain no mechanism for actually providing needed road maintenance. The truth is that over the last 10 years, Mr. Shetler, at his sole expense, has been providing whatever maintenance that's been done at the Oak Ridge Estates roads. No resident has contributed any funds to maintaining the roads, even those who have lived there for several years, and most residents have been there for several years. In addition, in spite of what Greg said, Mr. Shetler has paid and continues to pay annual assessments for all of his completed and unsold homes. He has several new homes under construction right now, and he will pay assessments on those once they're completed. Meanwhile, a majority of residents of Oak Ridge have refused to pay any road assessments. In other words, they haven't paid a dime for any road maintenance at Oak Ridge, either in the past or in the present, and yet they claim the developer is being unfair to them. The CC&R amendment in question was approved consistent with California law, the project CC&Rs, the conditions of approval, and the city's municipal code. And I'd also point out that the amendment in question did not require city approval, but the developer submitted it to the city for its review and approval anyway. Having said that, the developer has acknowledged to the residents that approving the CC&Rs without their input was not the best way to go about it, and he publicly apologized to them for doing so. In addition, he's made several overtures to the residents, the representative group, including offers of additional funds to address their concerns that he's not been paying enough. However, it seems nothing short of full capitulation to their demands will satisfy them. They've mounted an aggressive campaign to malign Mr. Shetler personally and sabotage his sales program. Council got a small taste of this in September when the group's chief representative verbally attacked the city attorney and questioned his integrity in public simply because he didn't respond the way the representative wanted him to. Castle Rock Development takes no side in the question before you tonight. It's your prerogative to take any action you deem appropriate in regards to how CC&Rs are processed through the city. Unfortunately, it's unlikely that any action by council tonight will result in a change of attitude by the residents who are refusing to pay for road maintenance at Oak Ridge. Meanwhile, needed road maintenance is not being done. Mr. Shetler is still committed to working with the representative group if possible. It's his desire to settle the road maintenance concerns at Oak Ridge in a mutually beneficial and acceptable manner. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak? For a second time is fine. I do ask that all questions are addressed to the council. We don't want to have a discussion with other speakers. All questions should be directed to the council, and any additional thoughts you have are welcome.
Yeah, I'll be very brief, just to respond to some of the things that Don just said. It's true that 21 of the 25 homeowners at Oak Ridge have not paid any of the road maintenance assessments. This is on the recommendation of council, because if we were to pay the road maintenance assessments, that would be an implicit acceptance of those 2012 and 13 CCNR amendments. So that's the reason that we haven't paid. And in our last communication with Darren, we said let's work this out, and we will pay all of those retroactive assessments without the late payment penalties. Let's see. I can't read my own writing. So anyway, that was, I guess, the main thing that I wanted to say. We are constructively trying to work with Darren Chetler, and I've copied you all on a communication recently with what we sent him back at the end of, I think it was October, that he has yet to respond to us. Thank you.
Thank you. I have opened it up to a second round, so anyone who has already spoken is welcome to speak a second time. Or a first time. With that, I'm going to close public comment, bring it back to the council, and I'm going to ask our city attorney to try to walk us through some of these questions. I know some of these questions have been asked before, and you have answered them before, and maybe you can address those that have been raised tonight for the record for a final time. And help us differentiate. I understand there's just a lot of disagreement, the kind of thing that, quite frankly, usually gets settled in a civil court case. That's not something we can deal with. Maybe you can keep us on track after answering the questions that were raised, exactly what is under our jurisdiction and what can be done. Thank you.
I'll be glad to do that. Mr. Munakata asked, who decides with respect to the CCNR proposed amendment? And the answer historically, and to use the Oak Ridge Estates CCNRs as an example, there was a first amendment to the CCNRs that was dated July 3 of 2013 that was submitted to the city for approval. And I'm looking at a document that's attached to that, which says review and approval by City of Atascadero, and there's some introductory language about the CCNRs and how it's been presented, and it is shown as being signed by Warren Frace, Community Development Director, and David Athey as the Deputy City Engineer and the Deputy Director of Public Works. And then there's another amendment submitted at that same time with the same individuals approving it. So I believe I've answered that question. It's done at the staff level currently. The resolution would retain the current system with the review at the staff level, subject to potential appeal to the council if you adopt the resolution that's in your packet. If you don't adopt that resolution, it would remain status quo, and it would be handled at the city staff level, unless you want to give some other direction on that.
Let me see if I can expand that question. I think the intent is, I think there's a thought that staff could come to, has a wider range of choice in the matter. And the fact is, we are kind of like lawyers and a judge in a sense. The fact that there's something in place has set some parameters that are really legal requirements now, and so staff do not have the discretion to go outside of those boundaries. What they can approve or deny is within boundaries given really to the city. Could you help with that? Was my understanding correct, or could you word that differently?
No, you worded it just fine. I would just add to it this additional explanation. That in terms of the review of the proposed CCNR, it would be reviewed for consistency with the project entitlements and the city's municipal code. That's how it's done today. That's how it would be done with the resolution that's in front of you. There was a question that was asked about what does entitlements mean? Is that the same as conditions of approval? The answer is that sometimes there are requirements that are imposed upon a project as part of the project entitlements in whatever form that would be. It could be conditions of approval, it could be an ordinance, it could be some other requirement. For example, just to throw one out, you can have a subdivision improvement agreement that requires the developer to do certain improvements with respect to their project, off-site improvements or on-site improvements. They typically have to bond for those. So these are just some examples of sources of requirements. So if the city has imposed a requirement upon a developer with respect to a project in whatever form, we would refer to that in a general sense as a project entitlement. And those entitlements, whatever they are, would be compared to the proposed amendment to the CC&R. And if the amendment to the CC&R would conflict with the city's requirements for the project, then that CC&R would not be one that would be acceptable. In addition, the city has municipal codes, as council is well aware, with many sections that may or may not have been related to a particular project. And if the proposed amendment to the CC&R, let's say it's going to say you can have 15-foot side yard fences. Well, if you've got in your ordinance, in your municipal code, a limit of 6-foot height, well, then it's obviously inconsistent with your code and probably generate a letter from the Community Development Department and or from myself to the developer who's ever proposing it, that that's not consistent with the city's requirements. Usually it starts at the staff level, and then if for some reason the individual who receives the staff level response is unwilling to accept or unwilling to comply with the direction that's been given by staff, then it comes to city attorney's office as a code enforcement issue. So that's kind of a long answer. I'm sorry, I'm a lawyer, but it's just part of an occupational hazard. If I wasn't clear, I'd be glad to try to rephrase. And the final question, which you got right, was can the resolution be made retroactive? And the answer is no. And the final question, because I see there was another one, what if the approval of the CC&R is reversed in court? The way that the CC&Rs read currently is that, in fact, I think as Mr. Ritter may have commented, the proposed amendment to the CC&Rs with respect to road maintenance didn't fall within one of the specific articles and appears to have been voluntarily submitted by the developer to the city staff for review and approval. So if it were reversed in court and came back, the city staff would then presumably have to make the same consideration that they did before, namely, is the proposed amendment consistent with the project entitlements and with the city's municipal code, the same as they did before?
Thank you.
I believe I've answered all the questions.
Any other council questions for the city attorney? Then we can consider taking action. What I would look at, I think we've had this on the agenda several times, and it may just be one of those frustrating situations where we're not going to be able to make much difference to anything that's occurred in the past. We can make a few procedural changes that will help for the future. And if we're going to take action tonight, I would like to kind of state that clearly what that would be, and I would consider if it's substantial and perhaps different than what's been proposed, I would reopen public comment just so that folks had a last chance for discussion with us before we take action tonight. If there's a leaning towards thinking there's something else that could be researched and hashed out and be coming back, then we should just do that and move on. So I'm comfortable going either way, and I'll just open it up for discussion or deliberation. Please use your lights because there could be a number of folks, and I'll look to that. First, we have Councilman Kelly, followed by Councilman Sturdivant.
I'm not ready to do anything tonight. I think Mr. Mancuda made a great statement. I don't think we're really going to achieve anything worthwhile with this resolution. I would like to maybe have the city attorney look into some of the other options we had with the disclosures and what have you. And my concern is that we're going to open up a can of worms here. And I think our responsibility is just to be involved with zone issues and ordinance violations. And I don't know if we can set up some type of policy where that type of statement might be included in the original CC&Rs or what have you. But I don't think we're quite there yet.
Okay. And since I have one more, I don't want to precede Mr. Sturdivant, but after Mr. Sturdivant's comment, I'm going to look for consensus since it's been brought up of continuing this. I don't think there'd be a need for much more discussion. We would focus on giving direction to staff. So, Councilman Sturdivant?
Actually, you can go ahead because Bob pretty much said what I was just thinking, the same thing. We're focusing, this resolution is focusing on something that I don't believe is going to really, it's not doing what we intended. So.
Okay. With that, I think there's consensus for this item to take no action tonight, and let us focus on any direction you want to give to staff. So now I'm going to reset the lights, and we'll go ahead with no one touch a light. Let me push the on button. Go ahead. And now we are going to revisit giving direction to staff, because they need clear direction from us of what next step to take. So first I have Councilman Sturdivant, followed by Councilwoman Fonzie.
I would also agree with the disclosure statement that
Councilman Kelly presented. Sorry,
and Councilwoman Fonzie also brought up. Thank you.
Go ahead.
I think the disclosure is really what we're looking at. We want future homeowners to know that there can be consequences that arise through homeowners association, including monetary consequences, which is what Oak Ridge Estate is experiencing currently. I heard you mention that you were going to open this to the public once again before we go forward. Was that your intent?
I think, let me see how much action we take. We'll have that discussion amongst ourselves here first. If we're going to take some action, I may suggest we do that. But right now we have a direction. What I am understanding from council is there's a consensus that nothing can be done about the past, and we're looking to focusing on the future. And one of those steps that could be taken is a disclosure form. That's one action we could give to staff. I agree. I think Councilman Fonzie, Councilman Kelly, have a good suggestion. That's one action. And if there's other actions, we should be clear on that to give staff something very definable that comes back. So far, that's the two directions I've heard. We're not going to follow through on this. We're going to come up with some new recommendations to staff. So does that conclude your comments, Councilwoman Fonzie? Councilwoman Moreno.
Definitely consensus on that. And I'm wondering, with that disclosure, is that something that has to come back to a meeting like this? I would be willing, even if it were to be bounced off of, let's say, Councilmember Kelly and Councilmember Fonzie, who are in the real estate business and understand those disclosures, that could be done outside of this meeting again, because I think that creates a lot more
I would
work
concur.
And that could be a nice streamlined process.
I can review what approval process would be required for that.
Thanks. What did you just say?
What
that
I mean,
was a maybe?
No.
He said yes.
You asked whether or not that's something that can just come back to two council members, and I said I'll review to see whether or not that can be, that whether it can happen without full council
So your answer is maybe. We don't know.
Well, I don't know the answer. No, just...
Okay. So my direction would be like that, if that is possible, that we don't bring that back, but that the two council members could be involved with that if, I don't know. How the others feel.
We'll get to that. So we can hash over that particular item. I think the question before us now, is there any other recommendations for staff of anything else council would like staff to do?
I wouldn't mind wordsmithing that a little bit, but
Well, that's a given,
we'll
yeah. Yeah. I think right now I'm looking for, is there any other items to add? I think it's given that we've accepted that is something we will forward. So I think the consensus is, again, taking no action on the item before us, to send to staff, direct the city attorney to draft a disclosure form with input from Councilman Fonzie and Councilman Kelly. And I believe the council would be willing to take action tonight to delegate to them a review and approval. And if that's sufficient, fine. If it's determined later that that's not sufficient, bring it back to the full council. But I think the council is saying they're fine with our two real estate experienced compadres to have some input on this. Is that reasonable?
Yep, we understand.
That sounds like we have direction and it's clear.
Okay. So should that be in the form of a motion, or is that sufficient direction for you tonight?
I think that's sufficient direction. Your motion, there isn't going to be a motion because you're not going to adopt the resolution. So you're just giving us direction to, as I understand it, draft the disclosure statement, have it reviewed by council members Kelly and Fonzie, and then I'm going to check to see whether or not there would be any further approval at the council level. If there is, we'll bring it back. If it's not required, then it won't be.
Given that this might be the final approval, would it be reasonable for us to make it in the form of a motion tonight so you have a motion on the record that that's what our desire is?
You can certainly do that, yes.
Okay, then I will move we do not adopt the resolution before us, that we direct staff to draft a disclosure form with input from Councilman Kelly and Councilwoman Fonzie, and that if those two agree with the city attorney and that that is the final form, that that be implemented for future projects. And if it's needed to come back to council, then we will do that. Do I have a second?
If I understand it right, I think you have that just for projects coming out of the planning department. But I think that form can be included in all escrows in Atascadero,
yeah.
So it would cover CC and ours for existing properties, and I think that can be handled through escrow companies or what have you, but I can assist you with it.
Yeah, I think I deliberately didn't specify, which means it applies to all, and if there's any restrictions, then the city attorney would implement that. But I think it's a good idea in general. So with that, was that a second, Councilman Kelly?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to ask for a roll call.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for coming out. And it's a tough one. I know we put a lot of thought on how could we address some of these issues. And it's something we're going to keep working on for anything else we can do to make the system better in the future. But I think it's clear, retrospection, we cannot do much. Moving on the agenda. We are to council announcements and reports. I have much to say, and I know how excited you all are when I say that, but I'm thinking since we are not going to be meeting next time, it may be just as well to go light on our reports and come back in January and get into a little bit more detail. So I'm just going to go council by council from my left to my right, and any year-end comments you'd like to make or reports, feel free. Oh, I do have one item, though. One item. I do have to express some disappointment in some of our police officers. And Councilman Kelly, maybe you could share a little bit of the insufficient resources displayed the other evening.
Well, I'd like to say I've been very fortunate in my life that I was brought up in a sports family. Got to see some great sporting events through my life, some great, great players. But I think last weekend I may have seen one of the best sporting events I've ever seen with the Special Olympics Hot Shots basketball game against our police department.
Who won?
Well, it wasn't a win, it was a massacre. there was a valiant attempt made by Chief Haley and the department, but for the third straight year, they lost again. I believe the score was 70-40. And, you know, I went down there, and I mean, I stayed till the end and passed that just to watch these kids. It was a spectacular event to see the fun that all these kids were having down there. And it was great watching them, and I just, you know, hats off to you, Chief, and all the folks that you have helping you put this together. I wish it was going on every weekend. It was one of the most entertaining sporting events I've seen in a long, long time, and it was a great event. And hopefully we can PR this a little bit more and make it into a bigger event. It was absolutely spectacular.
Well, they performed so poorly, I'm going to recommend that maybe our city attorney join the team or something.
That's going to help a lot.
Right.
At least write a check. Maybe it'll help them. I don't know.
Right. But I have no committee reports or anything, but since this is the last meeting of the year, I would like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy Holidays out there and hope they get together with their families and enjoy the end of the year. And I hope to come back next year and our city council do as well next year in serving the people of this community as we have in the past.
I'll just say it's been an honor to serve with all of you, with our wonderful staff. I just think we're on such a fantastic track and an upward trajectory, and I'm really excited about all the things that are going on here in Atascadero, and that includes our community. I shouldn't be amazed anymore, but I am. I'm just always amazed at the amount of, whether it's volunteerism or the activities and the different things that go on and the way we just all step up to help one another, and I love it. I love being here. I love living here. So happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and thank you all.
Councilwoman Fonzie?
I don't think I can top that one. I think that the City Council has worked hard to meet the needs of the community. The community has responded by stepping up to the plate on very, very many volunteer activities. I think we're definitely on a roll. Our city is going places. And I really do appreciate serving with this council. I appreciate serving this community. And I do wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
I too, this last weekend with the lighting ceremony and the walk around the lake, just incredible, incredible community that we have. And just so many people giving so much of themselves in so many different ways. I'm just very privileged and honored to be able to serve, and just wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, and enjoy this time and enjoy your families.
Thank you. And do staff have any final comments before I close the evening out?
I do. I echo council's sentiments, and I also want to acknowledge that this is Marsha Torgerson's last city council meeting the deputy city manager. The good news is that she will still be joining us, as she will remain as our city clerk, the elected city clerk. But she will no longer be with us on a day-to-day basis. She'll be retiring at the end of the year. We hope that she will be at council meetings. I would expect that she will remain.
I think so.
So I want to thank her for her 18, almost 19 years of service as a full-time city employee. So thank you, Marsha.
Yeah. Well, a standing ovation from at least the five council members. We do need a special opportunity. I'm sure we'll have some opportunities of recognition in the future. But I think
absolutely.
Now we just have pretty much just family here. I think you know we do very much appreciate your years of service. And working with all of us, as well as other council members, it's a challenge, I know. But thank you for your faithfulness, and you've been a role model for us in terms of integrity and respect and just community communication. You've really helped us be more transparent, certainly. You've brought many initiatives forward that have helped in that area, and we'll have opportunities to comment about that in the future, I know. But just a little thank you as we have this opportunity. And in closing, too, I think it's all been said, but I'm very proud of our staff, the effort they've put in, and certainly our community, just the giving spirit everywhere we go this last week with whether it's the Friends of the Lake and the Walk Around the Lake or the Historical Society, Friends of the Library. We could name hundreds of organizations of this community that give so much. So it's an honor for us as council to serve. And we all work pretty darn hard because we, like you, care about our community. So we're going to come back next year pretty soon, rolling right into a strategic planning session. We want to really put some effort into that. As Councilwoman Moreno shared, there's a lot of things really coming together. I think especially in the Tourism Business Improvement District Board on board there, they've got some initiatives. We really are actually getting some restaurants coming to town. There's a lot of things we can be proud of. So I think with all of that, we look forward to a wonderful new year, and we'll see you back then. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.